Once a month, we visit with a researcher at the University of Oregon about some of the discoveries being made or at least sought at the U of O. We call the monthly visit Curious, Research Meets Radio. This month in Curious, we talk about the constant challenge of figuring out the people of the past from the things they left behind. Sometimes they did not leave much. At the Paisley Caves in south central Oregon, the featured artifact is coprolites, human poop. Tom Connolly is the head of archaeological research at the University of Oregon Museum of Natural and Cultural History. His team's work stretches from Paisley Caves to highway project excavations and well beyond. Tom Connolly, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, the work with ODOT seems to be high on your to-do list. How frequently do you get contacted about road projects?
Well, pretty much every day. ODOT has been going full speed ahead, and we get involved with many of their projects, and not only ODOT, we do work with state parks and ODFW and other state agencies as well.
So pretty much anytime somebody has to break ground in an area that might be, is any area assumed to have something under it?
It's kind of a three-part process, there are archaeologists at ODOT who review projects, and any project that's going to involve new ground disturbance, we tend to get involved early on. The idea is to figure out what's out there and what might be encountered before you have expensive construction equipment idling nearby.
So how far in advance of earth moving do you usually get the call?
Oftentimes a couple of years.
Oh, wow. So they won't even necessarily, for example, pick a final route for a road until they've heard from you?
That's right. And so oftentimes the study areas that we work with are considerably larger than a final footprint's going to look like. And the rationale there is that if we encounter things that are going to be conflicts, resources that should be preserved or studied, there's an opportunity for engineers to do a little redesign so that we can avoid those conflicts.
Tom, I've often wondered about procedure. Do you just make test holes at regular intervals, or is there more of a read of the piece of land and figuring out where people might have gone at one time?
It's a mix of both. When we're doing work in Eastern Oregon, oftentimes, we're able to evaluate what might be out there based on what we see on the ground and just evaluating the landforms. When we're in Western Oregon, we more often end up digging exploratory holes to see what's there just because ground visibility is poorer. Sedimentation is often an issue, so things get buried more readily.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you have to have some idea. It sounds like you need to know a fair amount of geology in addition to archaeology.
Well, it's true. We look at landforms, we look at soils, we look at vegetation patterns, and that gives us an idea of what landscape features. We look at the history of land use, and so it gives us an idea of what landforms and what localities have been culturally important, and then we factor that into our evaluation for instance, where we might want to dig some holes to take a look.
So is there a pretty good map or set of maps extant that give an idea of where human habitation was pre-colonization?
It's not quite as fixed as existing maps.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain landscape features that we pay attention to, terraces, proximity to water, slope. Those are features that matter to where people live, and mm-hmm. So those are things that we pay attention to.
So, for example, if you've got a steep slope and ODOT wants to blast out a bench to put a road in, this is not necessarily a kind of place that would have been suitable for human habitation, at least recently.
It's a matter of probability. People find themselves pretty much everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of judgment based on long experience that goes into this.
Tom, has a road project ever been changed greatly because of findings, or is it just a case of you'll take out the artifacts and then the paving goes ahead?
Oh, sure. Projects get changed all the time. And that goes back to what I said earlier about, you know, we look at a bigger project area than will ultimately be a final footprint, because those changes do happen pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm. And what's the hit and miss rate? How often are things found when you get a call from ODOT or State Parks or any other state agency?
Oh gosh, I don't know a number. You know, we get involved with you know, any project that's going to have ground disturbance. We get involved, and probably more often than not, there is nothing to worry about.
Mm-hmm. So is this often a solitary pursuit? I mean, are we talking about sending one archaeologist out or a team of people? There was a picture that on the website for the Museum of Natural and Cultural History that showed one fairly forlorn-looking person in a rain suit working pretty hard on a rainy day at the coast.
Well, we usually have at least a couple of people in the field, and sometimes depending on the name. Excuse me. Sometimes, depending on the nature of the project, you know, we'll have half a dozen or a dozen in the field.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how much has the pandemic slowed down this kind of work, if at all?
The changes in our protocols have been that we try to do everything with day trips. You know, so staying in motels and eating in restaurants is pretty much out.
Mm-hmm.
When we're traveling with more than one person, we usually people who are sharing a vehicle will certainly wear masks. Oftentimes, we'll take more vehicles than we would otherwise need, so that we can get maximum separation. But mm-hmm. but in terms of the pace of work, it's pretty much the same standard routine. It's just our protocols that are different.
Okay, we're talking about archaeology here on Curious Research Meets Radio, our monthly visit with the University of Oregon. This month, our guest is Dr. Tom Connolly, who's the head of archaeological research at the U of O's Museum of Natural and Cultural History. You can join our conversation on the exchange. Questions, comments about archaeological practice, welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We mentioned at the outset that that you've been involved with the Paisley Caves, and in fact, your name is one of several attached to authorship of a recent publication in Science Advances called Pre-Clovis Occupation of the Americas, Identified by Human Fecal Biomarkers and Coprolites from Paisley Caves, Oregon. Now, maybe it's because I live in Oregon, but I thought that pre-Clovis habitation was long established at Paisley Caves.
Well, it has been long established. In any scientific discipline, you know, the rule of the day is always skepticism. And so when there were early radiocarbon dates for the Paisley Caves, people wondered, well, can the dates be confidently associated with human activity? And then when the first coprolites were radiocarbon dated, the question was, can we be certain they're human? And then the question was, and then DNA analysis was done to demonstrate that they were human. And skeptics came back and said, well, but DNA can move. If this is a coprolite of a carnivore that somebody urinated on 3,000 years later, can we get a false DNA reading? And so every bit of skepticism gets matched with some new study. And this is a most recent study that looks at organic compounds that are produced by an organism that are, in this case, a human organism that are specific to humans. So looking for those organic compounds within coprolites. And once again, confirmed the coprolites as human.
So we're talking 14,400 years or so ago that the people, somebody went into the cave and relieve themselves. And so this puts it how many years before what was considered to be the first occupation of North America?
Clovis is usually is considered to be about 13,000 years old. So this is 1,000 to 1,500 years earlier than that.
Wow, okay. I haven't asked the obvious question before. I mean, were the coprolites buried or were they sitting on the surface? How could anybody really tell this was human poo?
They're buried, and sometimes quite deeply, up to 2 meters or so deep.
All right. So, then I saw the pictures and realized, some things just really don't change over time, do they?
Well, it's in a dry cave environment, mm-hmm. and so things dry out and don't decay. So it's also the case that we get other otherwise perishable material in the cave, bits of cordage and bits of basketry, things that are obviously human-made.
I noticed that the cordage and the basketry, I mean, basically the example that is given in the recent research is one little piece of basket or mat, and you could relate this to where it probably would have gone in a basket from that period. I mean, talk about the process of identifying what it might have been thousands and thousands of years ago.
I've spent many decades looking at ancient basketry, and there are certain structures that are typical of the basketry of this region. The basketry, predominant basketry in this area was twining, where you have a couple of weft elements that twist around a warp element, and in that kind of twisting, you get a particular twist of the fiber that you're using, and then you also get patterned compression, where one element presses against an adjacent element. So by recognizing those patterns of twist and compression, it's identifiable as a piece of an element from a basketry.
Do your coworkers test you occasionally, Tom? Do they give you like an inch-long piece of fiber and say, "Ha, she wore basket. What do you think?"
No.
I had to ask. I'm just amazed because you have this length that it looks like it may be, 3 inches long, that piece that there's the picture of in the recent research?
But it has these regular pattern twist mm-hmm. and compression features that make it pretty easy to identify it as a particular part of a particular structure.
And well, it was pretty clear that looks like it certainly could be that, the way that the twist comes in and all that. Now, so obviously you have to know something about basket weaving, but not just the basketry. I mentioned shoes just a moment ago, but you've done it sounds like a fair amount of research into shoes and shoe fragments found around the West.
We have a lot of the caves in Western North America have been dug out. Many of them in the early 1900s, and a lot of that material, as I said, in dry caves, you get this incredible preservation, and so there's a lot of material, fiber artifacts, basketry, and sandals, and cordage from Western Oregon caves Western caves from the Western U.S. that are in various museum collections today, and we have been, over at least the last couple decades, systematically returning to those collections and radiocarbon dating little bits of fiber from artifacts. And we now have hundreds and hundreds of radiocarbon dates and a really great record that goes back, 14,000 years of fiber arts in the Western U.S.
Tom Connolly, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the head of archaeological research at the University of Oregon Museum of Natural and Cultural History. He's our guest in this month's edition of Curious Research Meets Radio, our monthly visit on research matters at the University of Oregon. And you are welcome to get into the conversation. Some questions about the findings that have been made in Paisley Caves or on some of the highway excavation project we talked about are welcome. 800-838-3760 on the phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So there's a whole set of sandals, it sounds like, that were fairly common, at least, or commonly discovered around Paisley Caves. Fort Rock sandals, is that the name you're using?
Well, yeah. In fact, Fort Rock sandal is a particular type of sandal named for the discovery of a cache of that particular type at Fort Rock Cave in Oregon. There were no sandals of that type at the Paisley Caves. Mm-hmm. There are sandals there, but all date from fairly recent times, within the last, say, 2,000 or 3,000 years, as opposed to the 14,000-year-old occupations.
Okay.
So we have no sandals from those very early occupations.
Unlikely the fibers would have lasted that long?
It may be partly that, and it may partly relate to how the caves were used. Historically, Native people were using fiber sandals, mm-hmm. and they were typically used in the wintertime, often stuffed with grasses as an insulation, and they were used when going into marshes for, you know, harvesting reeds or hunting ducks or whatever. And so they were a wintertime, typically a wintertime bit of clothing. Mm-hmm. And you tend to find them more frequently at wintertime residential places. The Paisley Caves probably were not that type of site. The absence of those sandals suggests that it wasn't a wintertime occupation. It suggests that it maybe was not a long-term residential occupation, mm-hmm. you know, kind of more of a stopover place for hunting parties and that sort of thing.
Do we know how different the environment would have been around Paisley Caves 14,000 years ago?
Oh, there has been a lot of work that's been done looking at pollen profiles in the cave to try to reconstruct environment and looking at constituents of the coprolites and that sort of thing. And it would have been 14,000 years ago, it would have been a much cooler, wetter time, mm-hmm. A lot more water in the area.
You mentioned the coprolites again. I was going to come back then to ask about, you already talked about the not in these words, but the DNA taphonomy, figuring out that it was, in fact, the DNA of the people who exuded the coprolites in the first place. But fecal lipid biomarkers, we're talking what, fatty substances within the coprolites?
I mean, they're organic compounds that are produced by an organism, mm-hmm. and they tend to be, they can be specific to specific organisms. So depending on which compounds you find, you can identify, you know, a dog or a horse or a pig or a human.
Mm-hmm. Is there any way of learning anything about the diet of the person who left the coprolites behind?
Well, sure, because coprolites are the product of eating. Mm-hmm. And there's a range of plants, insects. There have been parasites that have been found in the coprolites. Mm-hmm. So it can tell us not only about diet, but also personal health.
Okay. So I wanted to ask about the museum itself, the U of O's Museum of Natural and Cultural History. What is the status of the museum's opening or not with the pandemic?
The museum is now opening four members, and in fact, I don't know off the top of my head what specific protocols there are for visiting, but that can be discovered easily with a visit to the website or a call to the museum. A general opening is still someplace in the future.
All right, no date to be determined there until things improve a bit. I did ask about the highway work, but more broadly about this is summer. It's usually a great time for people to head a bunch of different places and do research. Were there plans you had this? I noticed you've been to Scotland in the past, for example, and that can't happen. But was there something you had planned on doing in the way of field research this summer that didn't happen?
Well, the museum has archaeological field schools that happen every summer. We had two field schools planned for this summer that did not happen. One of them at the Conley Caves, which is not too far from the Paisley Caves. Another one at Rimrock Draw Rock Shelter, which is over in the Burns neighborhood. Those projects have been going on for many years, and both of them are exploring cultural deposits that are Clovis age and possibly earlier. And those projects were both canceled this year.
Of course. Tom, just in general, do you look at the ground differently as an archaeologist, knowing that there could be something in there indicating the lives of the people before us?
Well, I think about that all the time. It is sort of the occupational hazard, I guess, that whenever you're out hiking, the trees in the sky you hardly ever notice because your eyes are always on the ground.
Right. You miss a few birds and things.
Yeah, one of those.
Understood. Tom Connolly is the head of archaeological research at the University of Oregon's Museum of Natural and Cultural History. He's one of the authors of the recently published research about the coprolites in the Paisley Caves in Oregon, published in Science Advances July 15th. And he's our guest in this month's edition of Curious Research Meets Radio. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Sure, my pleasure.
All right, good to have you. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. More coming up in hour number two, The Keenest Observers with Sean King coming.